A communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
A communication disruption can only mean one thing:
negotiation. We've lost all communication.
Invasion. What will the future of Star Wars bring?
You must contact me.
You must contact me and listen to Reed.
They wouldn't dare.
It's unthinkable.
In this CO Bibbles Bubble Bubble Star Wars Prequels Appreciation Podcast.
It's outrageous.
Hello, and welcome to CO Bibbles Babble Bubble. Welcome back to our Dark Ages investigation, during which I am going through the years that took place between the release of The Revenge of the Sith in 2005 and The Force Awakens in 2015, and looking at some of the influential pop culture releases and events that affected me and filled the void that Star Wars left behind. In part one, we made it from 2005 to 2009, looking at the tail end of the Harry Potter franchise, the rise of Mass Effect, the glory of Battlestar Galactica, and my initial flirtation and love with all that is Marvel. Here we are in part two, diving into some more exciting stuff as some familiar faces begin to fade and some new ones start to emerge. So let's dive into it. So in 2010, we see the release of what is likely my favorite single video game. I don't think this will ever be topped because, you know, while I still play video games today, I have a lot more responsibilities with work, relationship, etc. I don't think I'll ever be able to dedicate the sheer amount of time I did in a short setting, as in this case. But this is Mass Effect 2, was released in 2010. The sequel to what I thought was my favorite game of all time completely blew it out of the water. A lot of people consider this game to be art. It's in museums. It's recognized. And I fully stand by it. You have a huge squad of people you can pick and put together. And the character building for all of these wonderful sidekicks is truly delightful. You know, I said that Garrus Vakarian is my favorite science fiction sidekick buddy, either in a video game, a book, a movie, a comic book, whatever. But he gets some reasonable competition here. You get to meet Thane, the cool lizard assassin man. You get to meet Miranda, who gets to struggle. You know, at first you think, oh no, she's just the pretty girl they put in there. But no, you realize she has her struggles with her father and trying to save her sister from the same tragedies as her. You get to meet Jack, who's a cool tattooed up inmate who struggled. What's it like being an outcast? And how do I, Jack, compete with kind of the more mainstream people on the team? And Jacob, and you get to re-explore a lot of your old friends as too. You get a new Krogan. This is the big, heavily armored toad guy, but this is one who was grown in a lab, so it doesn't feel like the real deal. And they all have these loyalty missions. One of your teammates is a Geth, who were the bad guys from the first game. It's fantastic. It's phenomenal. It's like a Western, because you go to parts of the galaxy that feel like, oh, this is the Wild West. You know, no bars held. All rules exist to be broken. It's so good. I've played this one more than any other games in the franchise just because I enjoy it that much. I think the story is that good. The gameplay is that crisp. And I'm almost worried about the remaster that's coming out for it because I'm petrified that it is going to fail to live up to what it gave me in the moment, right? Or that they're going to try to make it too fancy, that it's going to take away from that core element. But we'll have to see. And of course, they released another book with this too, Mass Effect Retribution, the last of the Mass Effect novels that I've read. It's also my least favorite of the three, comically enough, but maybe because the expectation of the game was was so high. Speaking of sequels, we also see Iron Man 2. So this is, we're seeing that, okay, this Marvel universe that's starting to tie together with the Incredible Hulk and Iron Man is starting to take a further step. We've got a sequel within it. And at the time, you know, we've seen sequels to films. We've seen film franchises that follow linearly with the same group of core characters. The X-Men films, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films, The Dark Knight. We've seen, you know, Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. So we know that's a trajectory. So this doesn't, on its own, okay, Iron Man 2 being released doesn't necessarily mean anything, but you know that it exists within this greater universe because it's diving into S.H.I.E.L.D. and introduces us to Black Widow. And you get to see more of Nick Fury. And so you can feel this is all working its way to something. And even though, you know, a lot of people kind of look down on Iron Man 2, and, you know, I've seen some people even unfairly claim that, like, oh, the MCU was almost ruined by Iron Man 2. You know, I throw that all away. It's still fun, and it's an enjoyable ride, and it's well performed. And once again, going, like, how they bring great actors onto this, you know, at this point you have Samuel Jackson, Robert Downey Jr., who's really filling well into the role. You have Sam Rockwell, who's brought in as sort of the main corporate villain and the main superhero villain, a supervillain, so to say, is Mickey Rourke, who's just, you know, a year or two removed from The Wrestler, an Academy Award-nominated performance. And Don Cheadle has replaced Terrence Howard, who I meant to mention when talking about the first film in terms of the star talent. Yeah, Terrence Howard was Academy Award nominee. Now you have another one playing the same role in Don Cheadle. So that is a... truly fantastic. This is all piecing together well. Like, holy crap. You know, there's a lot of money that's pushing these films out and making these stories roll together. And of course, it's the second one directed by Jon Favreau before he moves away from directing anything in Marvel to go work on eventually The Jungle Book, Lion King, and now, as we all love, know, celebrate, and want to hold a parade for, The Mandalorian. Also in the film space, we see the Deathly Hallows Part 1 film. One thing that I really salute about this one is that this is the film that a lot of people gave a hard time for, that why are you splitting the final book into two films? You're just trying to make more money. And I agree. That is 100% of the reason it did that. You know, if you were able to make The Half-Blood Prince work as one film, and you were able to make Goblet of Fire work as a film, and you were able to kind of make Order of Phoenix work as a film. Though, like I said, I don't think so, but whatever, you know. You could have made this one work as a film, but they split it in two. And they do a good job with it because they actually add more material, more scenes between people. And you really get to explore the relationship between Harry, Ron, and Hermione and feel that in a particular way. And just once again, putting the timeline onto this, you know, when this movie came out, the characters are supposed to be 17. I'm 16, so I'm feeling, at the time, so I'm feeling a lot of the similarities with the characters. I'm like, I'm going to the movie theater and say, that character is a year older than me, you know? So, similar to where they were lined up back when Half-Blood Prince came out, I felt like, especially in this final swath of Harry Potter films, that me and the characters are in the same age group. You know, they could be my friends. That's very much something that's reasonable. Just one more thing about 2010 I want to mention. That's also when we get the one and only season of Caprica. Caprica is a prequels, yes, because this is a prequels appreciation podcast. Let's talk about a prequel here. This is a prequel series to Battlestar Galactica that came out. So we're looking at a year, over a year after the finale in 2009. It premiered on Sci-Fi. It only lasted one season. And a lot of people I know weren't fans of it. It was canceled. But I still liked it because it was exploring the world of Battlestar Galactica before the great nuclear war with the Cylons. You got to see, here's a cool science fiction world in, you know, in the flesh. Not just people talking about it while they're fleeing from it in space. So while that's a really cool narrative, when we see Battlestar Galactica, it's nice that we're able to see in Caprica an exploratory immersion into it. I even had a Caprica t-shirt, no shame there. I was proud to rep the show, even though I had a lot of friends who felt like, it's horrible, but I enjoyed it. Yeah, it's a little soapier than the others, but, you know, it still added to the sci-fi experience, so it deserves to have a little shout-out here. In 2011, we get the closure of the Harry Potter film franchise. It's now leaving this discussion with Deathly Hallows Part 2. I don't think this is that... You know, a lot of people think it's a beautiful ending to the whole franchise. I think they take a lot of liberties that don't really vibe well with me necessarily. But it was cool to see that come to an end. And of course, at that point, The characters are still 17. I'm 17 in real life. So what do you know? Full circle. We're all there. We're the same age. We're best friends. I'm also at the Battle of Hogwarts, standing up to Voldemort. So that was fun. And in the case with both of those films, those were midnight premieres that I went to. And so that's kind of me entering, you know, the space where I am now, where a new Star Wars film comes out. I see it not just once, but twice, at least, in the release night. And then immediately, the following day, four times within a week. So those Harry Potter films were my little trial run of sorts. So how can I pull this off? So that was all fun and games. Now, this is the point also in 2011 when I am introduced to the seminal franchise that really becomes my main focus for a good while. You know, as I said, Mass Effect had kind of replaced Star Wars. This even supplants that. And like I say, Star Wars is always there. You know, I'm never saying Star Wars is being pushed down, but this is my main focus for a while. And this is when we get to see Game of Thrones, Season 1. I immediately fall in love with it. I could spend so much time diving into Game of Thrones. So many other people have. If you want a great look, just go to binge mode on The Ringer for people to talk about it. But my own personal experience, I was truly wowed and impressed by it. That, you know, I felt like I was a little too young to fully enjoy Lord of the Rings when it first came out, as I mentioned in part one of this podcast. But, you know, Game of Thrones, like, here I am, the ripe age, ready to see it. Oh my God, the production value, and there's dragons and big wolves. So, of course, as soon as the show is done, I immediately start to read the books, which, hey, perfect timing. A new book had just come out that year, too, A Dance with Dragons. And I thought, well, this is great. The show is great. I just read a book in it. I'm sure the show will continue to come out, and more books will come out and line up well. I was right about the first part. The show definitely continued to roll out. But, no, haven't had another book since A Dance with Dragons. But we're waiting. We're waiting on you, George R.R. Martin. So, whenever you feel like delivering, please let us know. We're, hoping for the best here, but expecting the worst. 2011 also gave us two Marvel films, the first time since 2008 that we had two Marvel films, with the first Thor and Captain America, the first Avenger. One thing that should be stated about Thor, and this was also the case with Iron Man 2 and all Marvel films after that for a long time through high school, that's what I would do for my high school experience. I would I would go see a Marvel movie for my birthday and take a bunch of friends to go see it with me. So that was all, you know, fun and games and super exciting and really a blast to enjoy because things would line up with that well. So anyhow, Thor comes out in 2011, directed by Kenneth Branagh, who I really enjoy, of course, is Gilderoy Lockhart in Harry Potter, but I also knew him from his Shakespearean stuff and Much Ado About Nothing and Henry V and all that jazz. And so that was really an exciting and worthwhile thing too. And then that is followed by Captain America, which that was cool to watch because there's so many Lucasfilm references in that. You know, at the first, when the Red Skull discovers the Tesseract, he says, "And the Fuhrer is busy looking for trinkets in the desert." That's a direct reference to Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, about how Hitler was digging around in Egypt, looking for the Ark of the Covenant. And then later, when they're doing their motorcycle scene, that very much has a spiel similar to the speeder bike run on Endor in Return of the Jedi. So that's kind of nice. Little Star Wars spattlings there. And of course, I think First Avenger has been overlooked by the other Captain America films, but that started a great trilogy in and of itself, the three Captain America films. So I salute that fully. 2012 comes around. That's the year I graduate from high school. And so there's a lot. 2012, that's packed. So we get the Avengers movie, at which point you get to see the culmination of this first phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So that's exciting. I actually did not like the movie that much, and I'm not a big Joss Whedon guy, and I felt like, honestly, anybody could have done it, frankly. I know a few people said, it'll take someone like Josh to make it happen, but I think that movie was destined for success, and you can give it to anybody who has a remote experience directing superheroes in a colorful light, and they could have done that, or lighthearted films. Obviously, I'm glad it wasn't like a Zack Snyder, because that would have been way too dark and not matched where we were at that point. But we get the Avengers. We see the Dark Knight Rises, so the ending of the Dark Knight trilogy. You know, that one is very unfortunately marred by the fact that during the premiere, there was the shooting in Aurora, Colorado. I saw that movie as a midnight premiere, and it was odd to come out of the theater and start to hear what had happened in Colorado that night, that people who went to just see the same film I did, go through the same enjoyable experience, had a real unfortunate turn of events, and, you know, it's a damn shame, and, you know, the fact that, you know, many years later, the appropriate legislative action on a national level hasn't happened, and there's been more shootings like that, it's very rough. And so that always makes conversations about the Dark Knight Rises very, very complicated. I will say that, just to switch to the other medium, because this is a heavy topic, and I think saved for other times, but I just still want to draw attention to it, that, you know, also in 2012 was Sandy Hook. Good heavens. Yeah. Anyhow, in that year, we do see Mass Effect 3 comes out, the closure of the Mass Effect trilogy, the original group of games there, and that was a disappointing final end, but it was a fun ride at the time, and fun to feel the race against time in that game. We get Game of Thrones Season 2, so that was the first season of the show I watched after having read the books, and so I felt like I was in. And that was the case for a lot of people. I know tons of people who saw the first season, then read the books, and then the second season's out. So it felt cool to be in the know and see some of the characters brought to screen for the first time. You know, I was a big Stannis Baratheon fan. It's the Battle of Blackwater. Very cool. And then, to close out the year, we get the Hobbit trilogy comes out. And I know a lot of people feel like, well, how and why did you extend that movie to be that long? But, that book into three long movies, but I think it was all done very well. You know, I believe that the acting done by Richard Armitage, who plays Thorin Oakenshield, is quite moving. Of course, we have Martin Freeman play Bilbo Baggins, and it's very rare that you see a character who you had gotten to know in a book for a long time. I loved The Hobbit. Had read it many, many times. I had very much a picture of who Bilbo was, how he acted, how he presented himself, how he spoke. And Martin Freeman did that to a T. It was a real privilege to see that on the screen. So, salute to you, sir. And we end up seeing that franchise for the next 3 years, 2012, 2013, and 2014. And, I got to see all those as late-night premieres with a lot of my friends. It was kind of, between that and Game of Thrones, that was the main stuff I was looking, or not look, going to watch and take in while in college. You know, I was in college from 2012 to 2014. I graduated in 2.5 years. So I never had Star Wars films in college, you know. So high school and college, middle school, high school and college, this whole time we're talking about here. And so it was cool to have The Hobbit in Game of Thrones to find that experience there. So in 2013, we get Game of Thrones Season 3, which really has some excellent moments in it, and a very satisfying moment as somebody who read the books was getting to see the Red Wedding and getting to see people react to the Red Wedding. It was funny, I was studying abroad in Italy at the time, and, you know, they didn't have HBO there. And due to VPNs or whatever technical stuff, I wasn't really watching the episodes as they aired, right? I ended up finding a website to watch them online a couple weeks after the fact. So I was not watching The Red Wedding live, but I could see people reacting to it on social media, people who did not read the books, who were only watching the show. And so that was a really reassuring moment for me. Like, I did the right thing to read the books beforehand. And it felt like it was a lot of fun, and I'll always remember that, looking at that for the first time. You know, it's funny, you know, like being in Italy, which is 7 hours ahead of where home is for me in Austin, Texas. So, you know, I woke up that Monday morning for me, which at that point people had, the episode, which I guess had been released at 8 p.m. Central Time, so that would have been, just do a little simple math there, 3 a.m. Italian time. Yes, 3 a.m. Italian time, so they'd had a couple hours, more than a couple hours to stew on it before I woke up and just got to see the Facebook timeline all filled with that type of reaction. And, it really introduced a lot of cool elements that we see in there in season 3, and it's fun to see that and to see the budget get bigger and then do more exciting stuff. 2013 is kind of a weak-ish year for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Iron Man 3 came out, which I thought was really funny. It came out in the summer, but it felt like a Christmas movie. And, you know, a lot of people didn't like how the Mandarin, who's a big, bad, famous Iron Man villain, was reduced to kind of comedic relief in this film. But as someone who likes comedy, even to the present, I really enjoyed this kind of fresh take. The other Marvel movie to come out that year was Thor: The Dark World, which is probably the bottom Marvel film for me. You know, as everybody else was diving into lightheartedness, Thor was getting a little bit, well, how can we get to the gritty and serious nature of it? Of course, there was still, you know, comedy in there, more lighthearted. It was not as dark as, you know, The Dark Knight by any stretch of the imagination or some other stuff going on, but it just certainly felt very out of place. But I have a really fond memory of going to see it with two really good friends of mine. We had a Mexican dinner beforehand and went to an Alamo Draft House and had milkshakes. And so, you know, it's the type of thing that all of these movies, what makes them so important is experiencing them with other people. All of these video games, which makes them important, is that I was playing them at the same time friends were, so we could talk about it, and we could share, you know? When I'm naming all those comic books I was in part one, I didn't own many of those. People were lending them to me, or lending Game of Thrones books and going around, and so it was part of an active discussion, and so that's why it reminded me very much of when I was in my younger years, so between the ages of 5 and 11, when the prequels were coming out and sitting around the playground and talking about, you know, Anakin, Obi-Wan, Padme, being able to talk about Robert Baratheon, Ned Stark, Bilbo Baggins, Batman, Iron Man, etc. You know, so it's all a continuation. And this is when, like, nerd culture or dork culture is really being pushed forward. And so, you know, it's all setting the stage for Star Wars to really take its place as we come to the end of this Dark Age era. The Dark Age of Thor: The Dark World. Now, of course, during this time, Disney buys Lucasfilm, and we know, oh my goodness, a new trilogy of films is coming out. So that hangs ahead of us like a tease. And that starts to bring a lot of Star Wars interest back up for a lot of people I know, myself included. Like I said, it never went away, but it certainly begins to pick up a bit. So when the time we get 2014, we have season 4 of Game of Thrones, we have the last Hobbit movie, which is a bit long and superfluous, Battle of the Five Armies, and we have Guardians of the Galaxy in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then my favorite MCU film, Captain America: The Winter Soldier. I love it because it's like a spy film, and I was super into the history of intelligence at the time. When that movie was released, I was in the middle of an intelligence history research project going on at Cambridge, jointly with the University of Cambridge, King's College London, and the University of Texas. So it felt like, ooh, cool, spycraft. You know, even though this is very much different than what I was looking at the time, it still felt relevant to me. And of course, it's emotional and moving when Steve and Bucky get to have that reunion again. So all of that meant a lot to me. And especially as I was in the process of, you know, getting ready to graduate from college. Of course, 2014 introduces us to a preview of what Disney Star Wars will look like. And by God, did it just knock it out of the water with Star Wars Rebels Season 1 premiering in October 2014. I did not know what to expect. You know, by this point, I had readjusted myself to Star Wars animation. I had watched all the Clone Wars because of it going on Netflix. I got to see, you know, the Clone Wars Netflix Lost Missions episodes that came out that spring. And so I was really getting to, you know, feel attached to the Star Wars Lucas animation team. And so I knew it was going to be good, but the Ghost Crew was really right there for me at a wonderful time in my life and really felt like family. You know, as I was in the process of graduating, and, you know, the first half of the season, I was still in college, but the second half of season one, I was a graduate, navigating through all the craziness of life, and I felt like the Rebels crew was there, and I felt like Star Wars is going into excellent, excellent hands. And then just, we have that proven in 2015 with the release of The Force Awakens. The only other two stuff leading up to that that I feel are warrant mentioning is we get the closure of Marvel Cinematic Universe's Phase 2 with Avengers Age of Ultron and Ant-Man. You know, Age of Ultron, I think, gets unfairly discussed because it just didn't have the same excitement and pizzazz as the first Avengers, and it, you know, it falls kind of flat compared to what we see with Captain America Civil War in 2016, or Avengers 3, Infinity War, which came out in 2018. Nonetheless, I think it's got some great moments, and, you know, a great villain, great introduction of new characters and bringing it all together with Vision and Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. So I salute that fully. And I think Ant-Man is one of the most overlooked Star Wars films out there. Shout out, though, to Mr. Peyton Reed, who directed Ant-Man, who most recently we all know for having directed the finale of The Mandalorian Season 2. So, you know, once again, all of this Marvel stuff, everything that was happening in this 05 to 15 period was laying the groundwork for a lot of the Star Wars stuff we're experiencing and loving today. And Disney has done a truly great and phenomenal job of bringing all of that together. Anyhow, that is the long-winded rundown of the timeline. You know, those of you, if you listen to part one and then wait a bit and listen to part two, I probably seem more exhausted when talking part two, because it's true, I recorded both of these in one fell swoop, so this has been a long time of just me talking. You know, normally when I have over an hour of recording, it's because I'm doing a back and forth with other people and I have time to, you know, to drink some water in between or some hot tea and, you know, take a few breaths. So I thank you for your patience on this. I just want to give a few little stats. So looking at everything I just included on there, we were looking at an average of 4.36 media pieces a year. So once again, that's either a television season, a movie, a book, or a comic event or crossover series, effectively. The top 2 years by quantity were 2005 and 2007, pardon me, 2008, with seven pieces out each. It should be noted that I would have done top three, but 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2014 all had five releases. That just goes to show how stuff really picked up, you know, that the closer we got into and the growth of Marvel, and that's the stuff that really, like, yes, I've said multiple times, set the stage for the Disney acquisition to work and work very well. Overall, I'd say the top year by quality would still have to be 2005. I mean, it's very much affected by the fact that Revenge of the Sith is in there, but you have the best season of Battlestar Galactica, the beginning of Batman, my favorite comic book crossover, a Game of Thrones book, one of my favorite Harry Potter films, and my favorite Harry Potter book. And so all of that, I think, just really is a reflection of what this whole era looks like. I do want to give a special shout out. I think 2013 is dope. Desolation of Smaug is my favorite of the Hobbit films. Game of Thrones Season 3, Iron Man 3 is funny. And of course, 2010 has Mass Effect 2, which I think is probably the single greatest piece of medium in the entirety of this list. So a nice little shout out to there. The bottom 3 years for quantity are 2006, 2009, and 2015. And so this is, you know, especially with 2006 and 2009, how I said there's kind of, you know, peaks and valleys, where you have five a lot, barely anything in six, seven, eight has a lot, barely anything in nine, 10, 11, 12, they kind of get a good little flow going before 2015, there's a drop off. And I think the reason for the drop-off is there was so much excitement, at least for me, for the Force Awakens. Of course, at that point, you also don't have a new season of Game of Thrones that year either. So it really paves the door to really be all excited. Looking at what I would say is the worst year in that run, I'd have to say it's 2009. Half-Blood Prince, as emotionally connected as I am to that film, looking at its significance as a young teenager, and as much as I enjoy, the Dark Reign comic kickstarting, like I said, that runs for 4 years, so it's just kind of weak. 2006, which would have been the other one to consider for the weakest year in this run, Marvel Civil War comic, I think, is very influential, and also, like, I think at that point, I'm still just reveling in all the awesomeness to come out of 2005. So what does all this mean as a Star Wars fan? I didn't really talk about much about the Star Wars media that was coming out in there, other than that there was the Clone Wars movie that I just didn't really like that much, and the Clone Wars TV show that I didn't really watch until the later seasons, and then catching up when they're on Netflix. Well, I want to give a special shout out that during this time we have the Legacy of the Force novels come out, and by Aaron Alston, Troy Denning, and Karen Travis. And those probably were the things that most kept me interested in Star Wars at this time. So those were the books that looked at, Luke and Leia's children, not as young adults, as roughly the same age that we saw Anakin and Padme and Obi-Wan in during the prequels. I wasn't necessarily a big fan of the New Jedi Order novels. It was a little older than that. But they were also released in the earlier stage, but I loved Legacy of the Force, and because it timed out well that, oh, these are the novels that would take place if there was a sequel trilogy. Now, of course, there was, and there's a little bit of influence in there. Like, for instance, Han and Leia have a son who goes bad in those novels. That's Jason Solo, who becomes Darth Cadus, instead of what we now have is Ben Solo, who becomes Kylo Ren. But nonetheless, those novels were there for me, keeping the Star Wars interest engaged. I also want to give a shout out to Drew Capetian, who I mentioned in part one as the writer of the first two Mass Effect games and the great Mass Effect novels. He did a Darth Bane trilogy talking about in the Old Republic. So looking at, an old big bad Sith who did the whole Rule of Two. So thank you for those books being out at that time. I did not play the Star Wars Forces Unleashed game, so I can't really say that those games did much to keep my Star Wars interest active during this period, but nonetheless, shout out for it being there and for inspiring people in that way. So that's all super cool. That being said, I really have nothing else to add other than this has been a huge time commitment on my part preparing for this and getting it all out. I'm sure there's tons of media I did not include that was meaningful, so to my younger self, I apologize. For instance, the Young Avengers, I could have dived into more but didn't. The Hood, all sorts of great Marvel lines that were out there. TV shows that were important to me that had some overlap in that early period, like Lost. So, yeah. All in all, Star Wars is important, but there's so much more to it. And I just want to say that as Star Wars silver screen or big screen content, movie is light, and we got just the Disney Plus. Remember, open your horizons and enjoy other pieces of medium. Anyhow, I can't believe this has been episode 48, episode 49, episode 50 is coming out. Who would have thought the Babble Bubble would have been on this long, this semi-regularly? So we got a nice, awesome show planned for that. So thank you always for tuning in. I will catch you all around the corner.